Hey guys, welcome to the Last Set Podcast. Now, finally, I can open up my episode by saying this. I didn't hit her. I did not. Oh, hi, Mark. What's going on, man?
Not much, man. How are you, Joe?
So, let's recap. These last few weeks have been, like, incredibly eventful for you, but an incredible display of how much hard work and drive and commitment can get to you. Can you just give the audience a little bit of a wrap of what you've achieved these last few weeks?
Well, I guess I'll take it back to 6 months ago when I made the decision to do my first bodybuilding competitions. And so since then, for about 5-6 months, I've been prepping, so dieting and training for the competitions. And that culminated in the last couple of weeks where I competed at the ICN, my first show, ICN West Coast Super Show. And being my very first bodybuilding competition, I'd say I'm very happy with the result of the first one. The other competitors were phenomenal. It was a stacked lineup. But given that, I think I did pretty good for my first time. So I guess I'll give you a rundown. I got first in my height class of first timers, second in the under 23s, and then fourth in the overall. And I got best poser as well. So considering that, and like it being my first experience, I was like stoked over the moon. Couldn't have gone any better. And then come Sunday, it was back onto the diet for preparing for the second one, which was the YNF Perth Naturals. That was, just a week ago now. And that one turned out really well.
Yeah.
So I got first in the novice category, first in under 23s, first in the open tall, and then I took the overall.
Wow. Fuck, man. That's absolutely insane. So you went into about six categories.
Yeah.
Yeah, give or take.
About. I think, my first show, I was on stage five times, and then the YNF show just passed, I was on stage four times.
Wow. So that's one of the beauties of bodybuilding. You can come back and do different categories and all that, but, like, is that something that's decided on the day, or is it something before?
Before. So it's important to obviously maybe a month out, see how your physique is looking, where you're at, and consult with your coach what division is probably best suited for you. Obviously, if you have a division you want to do, it's best to have that, you should be thinking about that quite well in advance. And so the division my coach and I decided was best for me for both shows was fitness/sports model. Mm-hmm. So
what are the prerequisites then for fitness and sports model then? What are they looking for?
So the way it's judged, we learned ICN and YNF is slightly different. They look for slightly different things, but the basic rundown is a lean, athletic, good shape, moderate muscular development, but not as much as the other divisions, such as men's physique, classic physique, and your open bodybuilding. At the ICN show, I think they were rewarding slightly more muscular physiques, and at the current where my physique stands, I don't quite have that much muscle yet. Whereas for the YNF show, they looked more for that conditioning, shape, and symmetry, stage presence, posing, that kind of thing. So it was, slightly different takes on what the division actually is. But obviously the results speak to that, I guess. It just depends on what the judges are looking for on that particular day.
Yeah. So because it's one thing I've always been critical is when it comes to bodybuilding divisions, there has to be a clear cut difference between what you what the judges are looking for and what's in also for the category as well. So there's certain categories. I remember I spoke about this in the last competition with Tanya, last podcast with Tanya. She was telling me some categories can cross over very easily, but some categories have a very clear definition of what is accepted. And that's one thing I've always like been, okay, so that's one thing. If that's a physique competitor compared to that's a competing model, that compared to that's figure or whatever, when there's a clear distinction between the two, rather than just otherwise it devalues the category, because pretty much, okay, I didn't do well in bikini, so let's go and do well in figure and all that. So that's the main thing. So leading up to this, I mean, what was the thought process behind this, like where you thought to yourself, okay, before you started the prep, this is what I'm going to do?
Yeah, well, it's been something on my mind for quite a while now. Like I've been in and out of the gym for quite a few years now.
Mm-hmm.
And only last year did I sort of start to take it more seriously and really dial in the training and the nutrition. And I got to a point where I was like, I'll give it a shot. I want to challenge myself, because for me, I saw this as sort of the pinnacle or the ultimate challenge in terms of pushing at least your physique to an extreme. And so that was the mindset going into it. And so we started at 25 weeks out. So give or take 5-6 months from the first show. And I guess as the preparation progressed, my coach and I slowly realized that like I might have a shot at doing pretty well at this. And so, you know, I took that with a grain of salt. I don't want to get ahead of myself or be too cocky or arrogant, that sort of thing. I was just like, I want to do the best that I can do. I want to present a physique that is the best that I can present, and sort of go after that sort of thought process or philosophy of self-improvement, becoming the best version of yourself. And in this sort of niche of bodybuilding, that was to present the best version of my physique I could. And so, yeah, we got to 4 weeks out. That was where like my coach and I could see that my physique was where my physique was probably gonna be at on stage, because I was roughly within striking distance of being on stage by 4 weeks out. And it's good to, for your first show at least, be ready early, because you don't want to be scrambling.
Don't peak too soon. Is that what you're going to say?
Pardon?
Don't want to peak too soon?
No, not necessarily peak too soon, but you don't want to be scrambling for scraps at the end. Like, oh my God, I still have this much fat to lose kind of thing. You want to be within striking distance a couple of weeks out, so that it's just less stressful, less stress on the body. You can just cruise into the show rather than have to keep dieting harder and harder, and then making your peak week that much harder.
Wow. So you did, one thing I also respect the most about it is that the amount of months that you had leading up into this competition. I remember you telling me like you didn't even have, like you couldn't even have Christmas dinner or anything like that. You couldn't even party on New Year's. You couldn't even, I think you didn't, was it your birthday recently as well? You couldn't celebrate your birthday? You had to miss it?
Yeah, last year, yeah.
Yeah. I remember you telling me that and I just thought, fuck. That's harsh, but then again, there's an incredible amount of suffering that goes into this. But at the end of the day, then, now that you've won, does it give a little bit more clear insight to why you had to go through that?
I guess to an extent, I'd say regardless of the result, I would have still thought it was worth it.
Mm-hmm.
But that's probably a biased opinion, because I'm sitting here, you know, I've already won.
Yeah.
So that's probably, you know, affecting my opinion. But yeah, I mean, it does sort of validate all the work, all the hard work, and it does make it all worth it. But given that, I still would have found it all worth it just being able to step on stage and having an opportunity to push myself beyond my limits and do something I've never done before.
Fair point. Because with it, this is something, the one thing I've always respected the most about when it comes to competing in bodybuilding or any other like show or category. This isn't something where, you know, if you know, you have a couple of bad days and, you know, that's okay, you can always pick up. This is something where you have to dedicate pretty much everything to it. You know, it's what you sleep, it's what you eat, it's, you know, it's how hard you train and it's when you train and how you recover. Because let's say you had a couple of bad, probably weeks, that can set the whole thing up into almost like a critical failure.
Yep.
And you had to go through all these months of it as well. But the main thing for me is that it's got to be the only thing you're doing. That's the main thing, because you can't handle multiple things at once and still think you're going to do this. There's some things, but it depends on what you're actually doing. But if you're doing like multiple sports at once and thinking you can step on stage at a bodybuilding competition, I'm telling people, you are dreaming and all that, because the amount of training that goes into just this one competition alone is insane. So, like, was there anything that you had to change specifically to make sure you meet the demands of, you know, competing?
I didn't have to change too much.
Mm-hmm.
There were, like, I guess a couple of things outside of my sort of fitness goals and stuff that I had to put to the side temporarily. But in general, I'd say my lifestyle, my job, and what I'm doing day to day is pretty conducive to, I guess, being able to do that. And it's something I think a lot of people forget to consider, is that a lot of things, you need to have a lot of things set up or fall in place to do a successful prep. You have to be willing to give up the time for the training, potentially the cardio, the steps, the meal prep, the eating, the food, the consistent sleep, and that sort of thing, those sort of things. You have to be in the right headspace, in a good frame of mind, because your emotions, your, I guess, mind day to day will be affected towards the end of prep. And also understanding what's next, what comes after the bodybuilding competition, because it's very common for a lot of people to, after competing, eat exorbitant amounts of food and you become a bloated mess, you gain all these kilos back and your physique is nothing what it was like at its best on the competition day. And so that can lead to a whole array of issues like body dysmorphia, eating disorders, that kind of thing. So you have to be prepared to change your life or mold your life around prep going into the competition, and then have an exit strategy planned out with your coach and how to, at least to some extent, healthily come back to a healthy weight, body composition, and lifestyle.
Well, because with it, I remember you telling me once you got into the first couple of weeks of it, you were actually enjoying yourself. But then once you got into like that third or fourth week, when you really started to see your body changing, you told me you had like a bit of a mindset shift as well. What was that like?
Yeah, so I guess I've done in 2020, I did a pretty significant cut and I got pretty lean
mm-hmm.
during lockdown, just for the fun of it, just to see how far I could take my body in like a dingy garage setup and that kind of thing.
I saw that. That was cool.
And so up until that, the cut, this preparation up until sort of that point where I'd taken my body before wasn't too difficult,
mm-hmm.
but it was taking it past that, which where my body had never been before, was extremely difficult. And that was around the 8 to 4 week out mark. So that month before the 4 week out mark was just absolute hell.
Why was it hell?
Because your body just isn't used to pushing that hard and being in that state of being, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of what I was doing, training wise, and food wise, it was actually easy. It was easier, in quotations, than what I was doing to myself in 2020 without any guidance. But it was that push, taking it to a new extreme, which my body wasn't used to. My body was like, what the hell is going on? Why are you doing this to me? Mm-hmm. And it sort of really affected my energy levels, my hormones, my mood, that kind of thing.
Wow. I mean, when I hear these things, I think to myself, like, you've got to be a certain type of person and you've got to want it this much. Bodybuilding is not something you can half-ass. That's the main thing and all that. And it's not something you can just like... And that's why I'm like, yo, it takes all these months. So you got to be ready for it. And that's the thing. That's why I like about it. Because it's not something you can sugarcoat. It's not something you can cheat. It's something that you have to make sure you're 100% dedicated. So when I tell people... Obviously, because, you know, bodybuilding has become a lot more accessible to pretty much anybody these days. I mean... Even if they have a good enough physique, or if they have a good enough genetics, or have good enough, you know, body fat percentage. But if you're someone who doesn't have enough discipline or doesn't have enough regiment in your life, you're gonna get you're gonna really suffer big time through this and all that. So that was the main thing. Have you ever been committed to any sports? Have you done much sports throughout your life?
So. Essentially, I have no athletic background.
Okay. That's quite curious about that, because then how did you manage to build that discipline?
So my background is actually something completely different to fitness, which is actually I'm a classically trained musician.
Oh, okay. What did you play?
The French horn.
French horn.
Okay. And so up until like the end of last year, over half my life had been dedicated to mastering the ability to play a classical instrument and play it to a semi-professional degree throughout my whole education. And that requires it. You can have a much less structured life compared to bodybuilding, but the discipline behind the hours and hours and hours of practice, the repetition of the same things over and over, I guess was probably ingrained from my background in music.
Mm. So forgive me, because I know nothing about instruments and all that. What is the French horn? What is it like? Is it difficult to play?
So the French horn is...
is it a brass instrument?
Yeah, brass. Okay. So same sort of group of instruments as like a trumpet, a trombone, like a tuba, that kind of thing.
Okay.
In terms of how difficult the French horn is, it's probably one of, if not the most difficult instrument to learn and master. It is completely different to something like a piano, for example, where the amount of effort required to get a sound out of a piano is... little to none. You press a key, you get a sound, it's perfectly in tune, and there is no discrepancy in how it sounds or, you know, any other factors which you really have to consider when playing other instruments. Mm-hmm. And so for the amount of effort and difficulty it takes to just produce a sound on the French horn is immense, because it's very fine motor control of your mouth and lips, and also your breathing and air. And so it's a combination of how much air, how fast the air is, how much air pressure there is, how much lip tension there is, how you are forming your lips, what shape your lips are when you're trying to attempt to make a sound, and then what shape the inside of your mouth is making before you make that particular sound. All these factors contribute to what kind of sound comes out of the instrument. And so just all that to make a sound out of the instrument, it doesn't have to be, we're not even up to the point of playing a note.
Wow.
We're still at the point, I'm still talking about just making a sound out of the instrument. So that's sort of the baseline of why it makes it so difficult. Once you can make a sound, you can start working on, you know, trying to play a note. But then the problem with the French horn is the way it's designed is it works against you. So the basic, I guess, set of notes you can play. God, it's been a while since I've explained this.
I'm hearing all this for the first time as well, so I don't really do. But actually, one thing I'm more curious to ask is, the French horn is not a very common instrument, is it?
Not at all.
Not at all. So what's the backstory behind, okay, this is the instrument I'm going to play, and this is one we're going to try and master. Like, did you stumble upon it, or were you playing any other instruments beforehand? Or?
All right, so essentially it started in primary school.
Okay.
In year 5, I believe, we had sort of this year cohort music test that we had to do. It was compulsory. Everyone had to do it.
Wait, music was compulsory in your high school?
No, just to do the test.
Oh, okay.
And then after whatever outcome from the test is up to you to decide. And I remember asking my mum, because I really disliked the music teacher. I was like, I really want to just like intentionally fail this test because I don't want to do like extra music because I don't like this teacher. Mm-hmm. But my mum was like, no, you should try it. You should give it a go, see if you like it or not. And so I tried my best. I passed the test and I got offered sort of that basic instrumental program at the primary school. And so it was just kind of like pick what instrument you want to play. Play and learn. I ended up being relegated to the trombone because everyone else had taken more popular instruments like the clarinet, the flute, the trumpet, guitar and voice, that kind of thing. So yeah, I started on the trombone and I played that for 2 years those 2 years took me to the end of primary school. And I sort of learned to really enjoy playing and learning music. And so at that point I decided, yeah, like I'd like to take this a little further and keep doing it in high school. And so I had, when I had to choose what high school to go to, I went to Churchlands Senior High School. But unfortunately at the time I was just outside of the intake area. So my only sort of path into Churchlands was the GATE program. And for me, it was GATE music.
Okay, so what did you have to do for the GATE program?
So it was, you had to do 2 auditions on your instrument.
Okay.
A couple months apart. and I passed the auditions and they offered me a spot in the GATE program. And I accepted it. And so that would let me into Churchlands, even though I was outside the intake area. And unfortunately, they had already offered everyone else trombone positions. So I had to choose an alternative instrument to start learning. And that was either the French horn or the tuba. And so I chose the French horn just because logistically carrying around a 20-kilo instrument.
Wait, that's how big the tuba. Wait, the tuba is that the giant one?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Fuck that.
Yeah.
Fuck that.
Logistically, going to and from school, it just wasn't feasible at that age.
Was there anyone playing the recorder? No.
In primary school, yeah. I think everyone had to learn recorder in primary school.
Yeah, I remember that. I was so bad at that shit. I hated it. I remember when every kid like, had to learn recorder in primary school. And then I'm like, how the fuck did that have anything to do with education and all that? you know, learning how to play hot cross buns.
I think, yeah, the problem is it's just the way music is delivered in primary schools. I think there are many studies, meta-analyses on these studies about the benefits of music on just kids' learning and ability to further their learning. I can't sit here and tell you the details, but music to some degree, having music in your life or learning music in your developing years as a kid is beneficial, but it's just the way it's delivered in most schools where it's like, why am I doing this? What's the point?
Correct. Yeah. Anyway, so that's where the discipline came from, learning how to play the French horn, which is like an obviously incredibly hard instrument to work off. So how did you stumble upon training then? Because if you never, a lot of guys who I speak to, you know, they usually do start out in sports or they come from something, you know. So what was your story and how you got into first fitness?
Man, I guess it started in...
Was it Dragon Ball Z?
No.
Almost every guy says Dragon Ball Z, and they watched that episode where Goku goes Super Saiyan. Boom, everyone's like, yeah, that's going to be me. I feel you.
Yeah, so it started in, I think, year 10, towards the end of year 10, when sort of I went over to a family friend's house and sort of they were asking me, like, how's school, how's life, etc. And I got asked the question, what are you doing to keep yourself healthy? And I sort of realized at that point I was not doing anything. I wasn't doing any physical activity. Aside from, I guess, playing an instrument is a physical activity to an extent, but it's not conducive to having any health benefits. But yeah, I sort of got asked that question and I was like, man, I'm not really doing anything. And so I sort of, over the next couple of weeks, months, I was trying to figure out, what do I want to do? And so I came to the conclusion that, like, I started, you know, YouTubing, Googling fitness, that kind of thing. And it started out as asking mom, like, hey, can, like, I buy a dumbbell set from Kmart and just start doing little home workouts. You know, that was as ineffective as they were, because I had no idea what I was doing, nor did I know how to push myself, because I was like, oh man, this hurts, I'm going to stop. Even though it's a good burn, the lactic acid, you know. That's kind of where it started. And then I started sort of becoming more invested in it. I was like, oh, I should learn more about this, see how I can get better at this. Started watching more YouTube, and then I was like, maybe I'll try some calisthenics. So I bought a like a home standalone pull-up bar, dip bar set up. And so my quote-unquote training at that age, it sort of went into calisthenics. So I try to get better at pull-ups, dips, push-ups, all these bodyweight things, and manipulating my body through space. And that sort of evolved into, like, oh, maybe I should, like, buy, like, a proper home setup, like, buy, like, a bench press and that kind of thing. And then mom was like, why don't you just get a gym membership? I was like, that's probably a better idea, because they have everything at the gym. It's all set up for you, that kind of thing. They have all the proper equipment. And so that culminated in me getting my first gym membership at Good Life in Innaloo.
And then starting the Zeus life.
That was in 2015.
Yeah.
Sometime in 2015. I got my first gym membership. And I remember I got my, I got three free PT sessions, with a guy called Jacob. I think he...
Doesn't he run Perth Strength Club?
Perth Strength Club, yeah. Now, yeah.
That's the one, yeah.
I'll never forget, like, I remember him, those three sessions, teaching me just the bare bones basics, movements and that sort of thing. And so after that, off I went. sort of just training a couple of times a week. I think I was going 3 times a week just after school. And at that point, the knowledge and information out there on the internet was very, it was the Wild West back then.
I mean, there's a lot of, there's, since now it's come a long way, but yeah, back then it was like, the main source of information was coming from guys, and the only validity they had was, oh, they were big.
Yeah.
That said, that if it was a big guy, they must assume that they knew who he was talking about. Yeah. So how many years were you training before you actually, like, you know, realized, okay, let's go, let's step on stage?
It was pretty much until early last year. Mm-hmm. So 5-6 years of just sort of mucking around, in and out of the gym, not taking it seriously because my sort of all my time and energy was focused into music. Mm-hmm. So sort of fitness was an afterthought, but I was still at least, you know, going consistently, albeit, you know, not training, not having the proper training protocols, eating protocols, that sort of thing. But I, you know, was trying to keep healthy and trying to get stronger, that kind of thing.
Yeah. So there's a question I always like to ask every person who's competing on stage, because there's got to be a minimum amount of requirement that you've been training for before you even get to stage ready. What do you think it should be for you? Or more specifically, what do you think it should be for guys? For me, I've always said you should be training for at least 3 years. At least 3 years and do a mini comp.
Yeah. That's a tough question. It is very individual dependent, I'd say. Because everyone has different starting points. Everyone has different backgrounds. Everyone has different lifestyles and sort of genetics. Because I know one of the guys I competed with recently, Jabian, phenomenal. He has phenomenal physique. He's only 17, and he's been training for 2 years.
Wow. Okay.
And working with a coach, Dan England, Dan from Team Mecto. I believe for less than a year now.
Wow.
And so you have that on one end of the spectrum, and then you have me, who's been, I guess, quote unquote, training for going on six years now. So I think it is very individual dependent, but I think before making the decision, I think you need to assess how much muscular development you have. Is it adequate for the division that you're aiming for on stage? What's your diet like? Nutrition, for lack of a better term. Do you have good nutrition protocols in place? Are you eating consistently? Are you eating a relatively clean diet and eating whole foods, healthy foods, but obviously, you know, having some room for the fun foods? Do you have a coach? Have you looked into getting a coach for this prep? I would say more than anything, definitely hiring a coach well in advance from starting prep is probably a wise decision.
Yeah, I hear that one quite often, because going through this, it's entirely solo, you know. It's, if you're doing this on your own, you have to have a high amount of education, you have to have a high amount of, like, experience. And it's obviously, it's like a wilderness, you know, it's like a dark forest you're going into, and what better to have that than a guide? Mainly because we've also talked about, you don't have to be a competitor on stage to, it does help, but it don't have to be a competitor on stage who's the coach. It can be someone who, you know, has a good enough understanding of nutrition and training and fitness. And, you know, there's actually like courses on it and that sort of stuff, and has the proper qualifications. That's what I've always been a fan of, really. And it's always the ones who have been, you know, the most experienced have always had the best, because experience is almost like a currency on its own. For you personally, because also you work with Vince and all that, and you work with Keisha, and we've had them on the podcast before, and they talked about the process that they go through. When you came to it, like, What was probably like the hardest thing you had to go through? Like, what was the hardest moment amongst the whole prep where you realized, fuck, you know, shit, I got to do this?
I think the hardest thing was coming to the realization of how much of a toll it was taking on the people around me.
Okay. I've heard that story many times.
Like friends, partners, family. You really have to take a step back and sort of assess how you're acting around them on a day-to-day basis. And it's very hard to realize that in the moment when you're tired, you're hungry, your hormones are all over the place. You've just trained, you've just done cardio, that kind of thing. And so for me, it was realizing how I was treating everyone around me. And I really came to that realization after that 8 to 4 week out mark, that hard push. And when I got to 4 weeks out, I sort of took a step back and was like, all right, like how is this affecting those around me? And I realized like it was probably the person that it had the most effect on was my girlfriend, my partner, Jasmine. I had told her well in advance that, hey, like I want to do this competition in 6 months' time. It's something I really want to do and it's going to require a lot of sacrifice. And I had some structure and sort of protocols in place to let her know how I was feeling, what was going on with me and what was to be probably expected in, say, the next month. And so I'd sort of sit down and check in with her every month and be like, hey, like this is what's been happening, this is how I feel, and this is how the next 4 weeks are probably going to go. So this gave her, some understanding of what was to entail in the coming weeks during the prep. But obviously it's easier said than done. You can only prepare someone so much. It's only when you go through it that you realize how difficult it is. And I think, sorry, I don't know where I'm going with this. It was just being aware of how you're acting and how it's affecting relationships to the people around you. It was the hardest part for me.
Mm-hmm. I feel like it's also a test on everyone else around you where, you know, what's the best way to put it? Like, you shouldn't have to really keep explaining yourself. You know, this is what you want to do. You shouldn't have to seek other people's opinion to justify it. So that's why I always say when it comes to serious situations, you sort of realize who really your real friends are.
Yes.
You realize who the real supportive people in your life are because you're changing in mindset, you're changing your environment. So that's really a natural thing. So I think, and it's those type of people as well. Once you make it to the other side, you're always quite more grateful. You're always more grateful for them.
Very.
So that's a positive as well on its own. Now, like, what advice would you give to someone to say, I mean, sorry, Mark, you're 23, yep, so we're the same age. So what's your advice you would give to someone before they start something like this, especially a guy?
First thing is get a coach, I would say.
I love it how you say that as well, you know, because when I actually had Tanya on the podcast a couple of weeks back, she said, yep, first thing, get a coach. You need to do it. Get it done. Yeah.
Yeah. I think regardless of what you're wanting to achieve on stage, if you're wanting to do well and succeed and win, you 1000% need a coach. Even if you're just doing it for the experience, I still believe you need a coach. Just because it's going to be impossible or close near impossible to be able to be objective with yourself towards the latter part of the prep, because the changes to your body are so drastic, and obviously mood, hormones, and your view of many things can be skewed because you're so tired, grumpy, hungry. So having that second pair of eyes, that second opinion to guide you and reassure you that stick to the plan, stay the course, you're going to be fine. And just having someone else to plan this whole process for you can take a lot of stress and weight off of you. But also just getting a coach to, you know, learn from them, learn what they have to give you, that kind of thing. So number one is a coach. Number two is your lifestyle conducive enough at the current time / can you change it enough to make it conducive for this preparation? That's very important, because I know there are competitors on stage who are working 12-hour shifts, FIFO, wow, that kind of thing. There were some guys on stage who were working their ass off, but they found a way to make it work. And so it was, I guess, a matter of making their current lifestyle conducive enough to the prep environment. The third thing is, are you mentally prepared to lose a lot of weight, depending on where you start? Potentially lose a lot of weight and lose a little bit of muscle, because from what I'm just going to assume, blissfully, ignorantly, that everyone who I've just competed with is natural. It's going to be impossible not to lose muscle during the process. You have to be willing to accept this, even though, like, I've heard on the grapevine, that's just gossip.
Mexican supplements were slipping in the water. I got to ask you, when you were backstage and you saw everyone, was there any, I mean, you don't have to make names, but when you looking around at some people, would be like, "Oi, what are you, you sipping the Capri Sun?"
Surprisingly, no.
Really? No, I don't know. No one ever stood out like, that dude's sipping the Capri Sun.
So, I guess it's really easy from a outside of being in, like, really being in the bodybuilding realm to point fingers and be like, this guy isn't natural, like, this is impossible, it's not attainable. But
Liver King.
But Liver King's a different story. But, like, those who live and breathe the bodybuilding lifestyle and are real bodybuilders, you can really take your body far naturally. Just being so rigorous and regimented and having the love for the sport, you can really take it far. But obviously it's a different story for like, you know, social media influencers. Like you said, Liver King, it's like, this guy doesn't compete. He's an influencer. He's there to make money off of his body. So in that case, probably. But I gave everyone the benefit of the doubt. Like, especially in sort of Australia, at least, the sports culture is more geared towards having integrity and honesty and being drug free. It's a completely different environment to, say, America, where natural bodybuilding is more or less a joke. No offense. That's not to discount, discredit, or to say that there are phenomenal natural bodybuilders. In America.
Just nowadays, I feel like the idea of what is natural is quickly shrinking. Because you get it all the time. When I actually look at, I remember watching a documentary on natural bodybuilders and all that. I think it was from Generation Iron as well. I looked at the natural bodybuilders and I was actually even questioning whenever or not they were actually natural themselves. Like, I mean, there was one guy in his 40s or something like that who was a natural bodybuilder, and he was so huge as well. There was one guy I remember who was a wrestler. I'm like, I know wrestling is played with steroids and all that sort of stuff, and that's an argument for another day. But nowadays, when it's on Instagram, if I could show you, like, I reckon off the top of my head, I could list 5-10 dudes. I would show you them. It's like, this guy says natural in his Instagram profile. Do you reckon he's natty? And I'm pretty sure you would argue no and all that. So, and Liver King's one of those examples. I'm pretty sure if you're eating, I'm pretty sure you can't get that much size off eating like horse testicles and bone broth and
No, so
raw meat. I'm just like, that's disgusting. All that, you know.
Yeah, I think on that topic, the landscape of sort of that natty or not realm in the fitness industry is shifting. Back in the Wild West days of the internet, the fitness industry was plagued with fake naturals. Mm. And there's people claiming that they're natural when they're not and making money off of that. But there was also a good number of proper like natural guys out there, like Omar Issof, Alan Thrall, Silent Mike, Bart Kwan. It took a few years for people to realize, but like Matt Ogus, everyone from Team 3DMJ, 3D Muscle Journey, like Dr. Eric Helms, Menno Hanselman, all these people were good examples of natural bodybuilders. But I think it was like a 50-50 split in terms of fake naturals and natural guys in terms of what was being presented on YouTube and social media. Mm-hmm. But now it's shifted in an interesting direction where these natural guys are just their content perhaps more or less hasn't really kept up with the times, I guess, and so they're pushed to the side. And so these natural guys are like really a niche now, like the real natural guys. Mm-hmm. And so you still have all the fake natties, but then you get this group of people who are just completely open with their steroid use.
That I love that so much. Like, not, I can't pronounce his surname, but I'm just gonna call him Daddy Noel
Dazel.
Noel Dazel. He is massive, absolutely huge, but he's so open about what he does as well, and and that's the main thing. And as well, I got no problem with people taking steroids, but one thing I want to say is I hate it when someone who's on steroids says they're not on steroids and markets themselves as something they can attain naturally. That is dangerous.
Yeah.
And I believe it's very unethical as well.
100%.
So that's why you have got, but also at the same time, we have the reverse of it, because you see people like James Smith, who's admitted to being on steroids. He's not on steroids anymore. He's not absolutely jacked and all that. But he's becoming so incredibly popular because he's been real. He's been authentic. He's going through the bullshit. He's calling out the bullshit. And then it's also the same for people like, you know, Chris Bumstead is, like, honestly phenomenal. And everyone loves him. Or they call him Daddy Seabomb. Daddy Seabomb. Jesus. But he's open about what he does. And so that's the main thing. If you've been authentic and you're telling the truth, that's the main thing. But when you lie to me, when you lie to the public and they catch you red-handed, that your credibility just goes out the window, and whatever you were before that, you will not be the same. Yeah.
So I think being open about steroid use is a double-edged sword.
Okay.
I think it's good to be open to an extent, mm-hmm. but the issue lies in when people are so open that they're disclosing their dosages, what they're taking, that kind of thing, and then young impressionable kids are like, oh my God, he's taking that amount, so I need to take that amount.
Yeah.
And it's like, this guy is an IFBB professional bodybuilder. You're going to do massive amounts of damage to your body taking those amounts. And that's where the education on steroids is really important.
I wish it was more accessible, though.
It's accessible if you know where to look.
Yeah.
Derek from More Plates, More Dates.
Yeah, he's brilliant. Yeah.
There are people out there. I can't think of any others at the moment, but they most definitely are educating on what particular substances do, how it'll affect your hormonal profile, what long-term, short-term side effects there are, what combinations of steroids are good. Another one came to mind. He's a European guy. I think Dutch, Steve something. he does a podcast with Derek. But there is a growing sort of group of people educating people on steroids.
I love that.
Again, it's steroids, no matter what you do, steroids are not healthy. They are not good for you. Obviously, they have a background in treating medical conditions,
mm-hmm.
but that is under doctor supervision, doctor prescription, and at dosages so low that they're prescribed for treating these ailments. I do believe you can take steroids in a healthy manner, mitigate the risks, and
but it's like being at the high roller table, man. You can't just stop and leave with everything you have. You just got to keep playing the game, you know?
Yeah. So I don't think you have to take massive amounts to get to the top. It's very also genetic, your response to how your body responds to steroids, sort of how much muscle you grow, how lean you get, what side effects you get. Is very different person to person.
Yeah.
And that's unfortunately something you won't know until you take them.
Yeah. Here's something I'll ask you lightly, because I've been asked this before recently as well. Would you ever do it?
So,
I mean, you don't have to have a serious thought about it, and I don't want the audience to take it seriously, but it's just a thing. Would you ever do something like that?
Yeah. So this is something I've had a lot of conversations actually with my partner with for a while now. It's kind of like, how would you react if I took steroids, or, you know, that kind of thing, or just like talking about like, what if I did, what would happen, how would it affect our relationship, that kind of thing. And after these two competitions, I've definitely come to at least the short-term conclusion that I still have a lot to gain and grow being natural. I still believe, like, I've only been training seriously for bodybuilding and having a coach for more or less a year now.
Yeah.
Or a coach for 6 months. But my sort of, I guess, next few years plan, at least, is to take a long extended off season to really grow and make the most of my, you know, natural potential.
Mm-hmm.
And see where the cards fall next time I compete, and see where my headspace is at and whether or not I want to take it any further. And that will also, I'll have to take into consideration where my life is at that point. Do I have like a stable income? Am I, you know, have I got a roof over my head? Can I afford all the expenses that come with taking steroids and that kind of thing? And then also just weighing up whether or not it's worth potentially risking my long-term health for being more competitive and taking it to the next level. But that is sort of, I'm sort of leaving that for sort of after I next compete naturally. Mm-hmm. But in like, long story short, possibly, maybe, just depends where my life is at in the next few years.
Good man. It's a good area to finish up. We're just running out of time right now. But first of all, man, thank you very much for coming on. It's good to have you back on.
Yeah, thank you. I'm
very proud of you after all that hard work you put yourself through and all that. And now you finally got here. So the last thing I was going to ask before we wrap this up, a couple of things actually. So the first thing I was going to ask is, do you have a plan of what are you going to be competing at all for the rest of the year, or are you going to take the rest of the year off?
Yeah, so I probably won't be competing until end of next year, so season B 2023.
Okay.
Or beginning of 2024.
Good man. All right, so Mark, just before we finish off, if anyone wants to follow you, where can I find you, man? Your last account got sucked. Suck hammer.
Did you
find out why they did that?
No. So they just basically, without warning, they flagged me as a bot. So I think it had to do more with my follower base. It was mainly just like spam accounts and bot accounts, and I was trying to get rid of them.
Okay.
But in the process of getting rid of them, I myself got flagged as a bot and I got banned.
And you couldn't get it back?
Nah. I appealed it a couple of times. It's been a month now. Nothing. But I think my new account is just better anyway. It gets better engagement.
Which is?
So my new account is Mark Y Warriner. That is Mark Y Warriener on Instagram.
Yeah, because Yoshimasa Lifts was a good handle. I like that one.
It was good, but for some reason I can't use that handle. And it's like the account exists, the name is taken, but I can't use it on a new account. So
fair enough. All right, guys, thank you very much for listening to the podcast. Mark, thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you.
Make sure you follow us on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. Hit us up if you want to be a guest. Also, if you want to donate to the podcast, go to www.buymeacoffee.com/lastsetpodcast. Thank you very much, guys, and that is game.